I went to the doctor. All he did was suck blood from my neck. Do not go see Dr. Acula.
One trainer put me on the no-carb, the Atkins. They said after a week, you won't have any carb cravings. I felt lied to. I had cravings. When you drive by a bakery and you jump out of a moving vehicle, that's a craving. I had hallucinations. I thought Dr. Phil was on my front lawn. John, come out here and exercise. You can't be big if your lifestyle won't allow it.
Wilson, what are you doing?
Hi, Hotem. I'm just testing my maracas.
Usually when I have mine tested, the doctor makes me turn my head and cough.
I'm the doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life.
Oh, help me, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
What's wrong with me?
I think you're crazy.
Want a second opinion?
You're also lazy.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius. Oh, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Zaius, Dr. Zaius.
Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's time for the Wednesday House Call, and I want to fit in as many calls as we possibly can in this hour as you do your Wednesday check-in. Mm-hmm. Good to see you.
Good
I know
to see
a,
you
lot
too.
Of, a lot of people, obviously, questions about the flu, questions about shots, mass conspiracy theories. The government is, you know, injecting all kinds of nasty stuff into us, and maybe we should make it mandatory. I don't think I would go for that, but nevertheless, you encourage everybody, obviously, to get their mm-hmm. flu shot. The city has expanded clinics, no city-run clinics on today. They resume again tomorrow, and of course you can go to the pharmacy and get your flu shot. But 521-TALK, star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA. If you have any health-related questions for Dr. Barry Dworkin, every single phone line available right now. Tammy in Carp, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Barry.
Hi.
My four-year-old is scheduled for oral dental surgery, and he's developed a little bit of a cough. Is it safe for him to be put under an anesthetic and have the surgery done?
Well, if he has no evidence of any specific viral infection or respiratory infection that compromises his breathing, it usually isn't a major issue.
Even if he has that dry cough while he's asleep at night, that's still okay to go ahead with surgery?
If his nose is not blocked up,
nope.
And he's otherwise has no fever, his activity levels are normal, the cough in and of itself is not necessarily a contraindication to any particular type of anesthetic or surgery, because what they measure is what his lung function is like. That is, are his lungs adequate enough to be able to receive oxygen to maintain oxygen saturation in his blood? And so if you have a severe infection, if you have a lung infection where lung function is compromised, where he can't oxygenate as well, then absolutely, if you use an anesthetic and you're using a general anesthetic where they are usually assisted with breathing, then yes, that can certainly increase their risk of complications. But if he's breathing well on his own and during the day he's doing fine, he's not coughing that much, that's not a contraindication to any surgery. It's more as they measure lung function. For example, if they listened to his lungs and they heard that he was chesty or he had noise in there or he had fluid that it was accumulating in the lung, they probably would say, no, we're not going to do it. But if the lungs are nice and clear, then the cough itself becomes less of an issue.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tammy. Good luck. 521-TALK, folks, star 580 or 1-800-580-CFRA. If you have a health-related question for Dr. Barry Dworkin, and again, every single phone line is available right now. I've got my own, you know, I come up with these crazy theories, backed by no scientific data whatsoever.
Okay.
About why the flu is worse this year. And I think it's because it struck earlier. It struck at a time when a lot of people were getting together. People were on holidays. Families were getting together. We were kind of in a more social setting. And after that happens, boom, right after Christmas, boom, just like that. The flu is everywhere.
Yeah, it is possible. The other thing is that the flu virus changes from year to year, sometimes slightly, sometimes more severely. And if people have not encountered that virus, and many people have had the flu in the past, so they do have antibodies that will protect them from certain strains.
Yeah.
But if they encounter something that is a little bit different, which likely happened this year, then you'll tend to see more flu outbreaks. You'll see more people contracting it and spreading it much more quickly. But it is still a very interesting point that you're raising, Rob, because it is an unpredictable illness in terms of knowing from year to year how severe it's going to be. Last year was relatively mild. This year is more severe. It may be mild again next year, even more severe. You can't predict. And that's the difficulty of trying to manage public health, is that you don't want to be alarmist, but at the same time, you have to consider always the worst case scenario, because at least then you'll be able to protect people more so than you would from just saying, oh, it's going to be a mild thing this year, and then
right. How would they ever know?
Yeah.
Right? How would they ever know?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's take some more phone calls here. Greg in Ottawa. Greg.
Hi there.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm about 4 months now post-surgery for a rotator cuff repair.
Okay.
And at the same time, I also had what's called a bicep tendinitis.
Yes.
Okay. So my question is, well, my condition is, I should say rather, is that since the surgery, I've developed what's called a frozen shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And so far I haven't really had much in the way of options as far as how to resolve that or you know, besides physiotherapy, which I've already gone down that road with little to no success, basically no improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And so my surgeon has told me that too early to consider going back in and re-scoping the joint. But I'm just wondering if you know of any other like specific physio or any other options or avenues to pursue to try and resolve that.
Well, there is. If the pain and stiffness continue after you've done a whole course of physical therapy and the joint has been examined again, and if there's still... Yeah, and so and if there's no other cause of the symptoms, then what follows from that are to reduce the inflammation in that area. They sometimes will inject a steroid into the joint itself, and that can also help, especially if physical therapy is done after the injection, because you've reduced the inflammation. And there's also something called a joint dilation, where they will inject fluid into the shoulder joint, which can increase the space in the joint and improve motion. It's sort of like putting a bit more oil or fluid into the joint, separating the tissues that are sort of pulled together. And
yeah.
That also can help improve the shoulder. So those are that's what follows after, and that's the position you're in right now. That's what follows after the physical therapy. So the discussion should be with your physician about a steroid injection or what's called joint dilation.
So I don't know if this is correct information or not, but I think he was hesitant about the steroid injection because of the, remembering right, that he said that there's possibility that the... Could damage the tendons?
Correct. You have that risk. And so the caveat to that is after you get, the activities that you use after getting a treatment like that, is that you do have to protect the shoulder for about 30 days. So you have to limit reaching out and grabbing things, overhead positioning, you know, lifting or pushing or pulling things, because that's where the tendons get really strained. So
okay.
And that's why it's very important, if you get that steroid injection, that if you go for physical therapy, they first have to know that you had the steroid injection, and the exercises and the rehabilitation efforts will be done in accordance with minimizing the risk to the tendons, and they'll likely do very light types of motion to get the range of motion back, as opposed to heavy types of pulling or pushing to strengthen the shoulder.
Okay, and what was that other option you said that...
It's called a joint dilation.
Joint dilation.
And they use a fluid to put into the shoulder that increases the space in the joint, so the joint is not as stuck or creaky, as it were.
Okay, much appreciated. Thank you.
You're welcome, Greg.
Thanks, bye.
Okay, we'll take another call here before the news. Shyam.
Doctor, can you please tell me? I took the vaccine in November, and first week of December, second week, I started getting the flu symptoms. So I went to the clinic and they said, well, they told me that I had to take rest, etc. So, okay, now I'm much better, but my cough is still continuing. It's almost four weeks, doctor. So when I called them, they said, well, you know, we can't do anything else. If you feel bad, go to the emergency. No, that is their, the Sand Hill family doctor. That's a sort of, so, doctor, if you could suggest me something, that how my cough is, I don't have any phlegm anymore.
Right.
I get this dry cough going on and on, and especially, you know, it comes, it's a bit less now. I took this Bakil from my pharmacy, Bakil, and that helps me a lot, but I still have this cough. I was wondering if anything else is going on.
Is the cough worse at night when you're sleeping? Do you tend to cough a lot?
Doctor, before I go to sleep, I get that. And then if I take Bakil, I could sleep.
Okay. Well, one of the things that happens, this is very common thing after viral infections of the upper chest or the bronchi, is that the airways, or we call the bronchi, or the tubes that run into your lung, can get irritated because the virus damages the skin on the inside of them. And so they will become twitchy and that can make you cough. And a lot of times this cough can continue sometimes 4, 6, 8 weeks after an infection.
Oh, yes.
And some of the things that we try... First of all, antibiotics don't work for something like this, so there's no because it's not a bacterial infection. However, what does help some people, and it's certainly worth a try because you can do this in your doctor's office, is a puffer that we use to treat asthma. You use it to relax the airway, and you certainly can do that in the office because if it works within a few minutes, and you tend to feel more relaxed in the chest.
It's called puffer, is it?
Yeah, asthma puffer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and although you don't have asthma, the mechanism that is causing this cough is very similar, and it sometimes will calm things down. It's not perfect, but it certainly can tend to calm the coughing down and make
things work better. I remember going to the doctor with something very similar to Shyam, a doctor in your office, as a matter of fact, listened to my chest and said there was a symphony going on in there. And so I was actually prescribed two different kinds of puffers.
Right, because you had inflammation and were wheezy. And so, the two medications were both the bronchodilator and the inhaled steroid to reduce the inflammation in the chest. Yeah, but it's very common to see that. I think I talked about this with Rob last week about cough and the studies that were done, that people tend to think a cough should last about, 7 to 10 days, but really coughs on average last double that time.
That's
or
right.
even longer.
Yeah.
So, and it's not anything you can do much about other than providing some symptomatic relief.
That's right. Okay, we're back after the news. So Keith and Christine and Marie, all hang on the line or call back right after the news and you'll be first in line. Okay, we are back with Dr. Barry Dworkin. It's the Wednesday House Call here on 580 CFRA. 521-TALK, 521-8255. Star 580 on Bell Mobility or 1-800-580-CFRA. Plenty of phone lines available. We'll wait not too long. Keith, you're up next, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, doctor. I have had a sciatic problem for the last two and a half years. And what happened was I was working out, and all of a sudden, I guess I didn't stretch quite enough and felt a pop. And next thing you know, I've been diagnosed with having a sciatic problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done the physio thing on and off. And I can get it to it's pain-free as long as I don't try to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I start doing that, I it just comes right back. And I'm wondering, if you get to be a certain age, is that just the way life is? Or?
Well, I guess the first thing to know is what they did to diagnose the sciatic problem. What did they do to figure that out for you?
Well, basically, my GP said to go to a physio, and then the physio, they you stand up, and they say, okay, how you're standing, and they say, okay, and they grab your legs, and they do this and that, and when you say ow at certain spots, and they push certain places, and they say, okay, and it looks like you definitely got a sciatic problem, and, you know, the fact that at the time it went right down the kneecap, of course, and so right from the middle lower back, and, you know, the right cheek, and all the way down the leg. And he said, "Yeah, that's a classic case of sciatic problem." And then it's just a matter of. And he said, "The problem is that the muscle that's the problem is so deep down in the gluteus that it's really, really hard to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and that's the whole problem. So, and of course, you know, if I keep going to physio the rest of my life, I'll be broke, but I'm sure he'll be happy. So I'm just wondering, is it just something I got to live with? Or?
Okay, well, the first thing is the pain that you had go down your leg, it stops at the knee?
It like right now it's not like that, but yeah, the worst was it actually, at one point, it actually went down all the way lower, even to my ankle.
Okay.
But that was rare. Usually it would just go to the knee when it flared up.
Okay, so what we have actually is unlikely to be a disc problem that's causing sciatica, right? Because sciatica, by definition, means an impingement or a crushing or a compression of a nerve that is coming out of your back, and the nerve, because of the way it winds its way down the leg, usually ends up at the level of your toe. So normally, this kind of thing, when you have a disc that ruptures, that pushes on the nerve, it's usually one side or the other. And the pain is almost electric shock-like that will run down right to the toes. And most people walk stooped over, and they're extremely uncomfortable. Pain that goes down to the knee, and especially when it goes down the gluteus and down the back of the leg to that area of the knee,
mm-hmm.
is usually muscle damage, muscle and tendon and ligament damage, and not the nerve itself.
Oh.
So it's not sciatica, it might be sciatic-like just in terms of how it runs, but sciatica is a very specific defined term.
Oh.
And the reason I asked how they figured this out is because really, other than, I mean, there's certainly some physical exam that you can do to see if the sciatic nerve is damaged. One classic way is if you have someone sitting just in front of you and you take the leg that hurts and you have them straighten the leg straight out and you lift the leg, you continue to lift the leg up past 90 degrees from the hip. If they get pain that runs down to the toes when you do that, that tells you that the nerve in the back is being pulled.
Mm.
And so for people who don't have that, that's one way to rule out that it's the sciatic nerve.
Oh.
The other way is by doing either a CT or MRI, which will show if a disc has been ruptured. But again, the reason for doing that is only if the person has a tremendous reduced function of the leg, numbness or paralysis. The pain is just so incredibly bad that they just they're literally paralyzed with pain because they can't move. Those are emergency situations where you do that imaging. Now, that being said, if we make the assumption that this is muscle and ligament and tendon, this can be treated. And so the physio may be one way, but I find that there are a few other approaches that tend to work. There are athletic therapists that will do hands-on. They sort of break down and stretch the muscle in the area that hurts. It hurts to do it, I'll tell you, because I've had it done to me for different things, but it tends to work quite well and improve function. And they do this for half an hour to 45 minutes. Their hands are working on that muscle, stretching things out. And that might be more effective for you than the physiotherapy, especially if you've already gone through the courses of physiotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would suggest is actually just taking one, just go once to see an athletic therapist, a certified athletic therapist, and see what they have to say, because the athletic therapist is geared towards getting you active and doing your exercise again without having that kind of pain. And they're the guys also that work on, the Ottawa Senators and the athletes that get injured. The athletes go see them to try to get back into the game very quickly.
Okay, good luck, Keith, and we'll move along here to Marie. Hello, Marie. Oh, Marie is on the phone, I think. Marie, are you with us?
Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin and Rob.
Hi there.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a kind of, I feel silly asking this, but I take medicine for my blood pressure.
Okay.
I take metoprolol and I take Ramipril, right?
Okay.
I've noticed, and I have anxiety and I take for that too. I've noticed when I go for my walk in the day, and when I went this afternoon, my blood pressure was 117 over 77 or 119 over 77, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
When I came back, I took it. Maybe I don't wait long enough. I don't know. It was 140 or something. But then I can't get it to go down. And the more I worry about it, the higher it goes.
Right. And that's the anxiety component of it, because it's increasing your heart rate and bringing your pressure up. I think what was telling is that your pressure was 117 over 77, and it certainly is going to go up when you exercise. That's how your body responds. Your heart beats faster. It wants to circulate blood a bit more efficiently. So that's a normal thing to happen. And even then, 140 is not so bad.
Oh, yeah, but I'm up to 180, too.
Yeah, that's not so good.
Oh my gosh, it's high. Oh my gosh, it's high. And it just kept going higher. Right?
Yeah, and that's the danger of taking blood pressure measurements after you exercise. You're probably better off not taking the number. And I would imagine then your pressure would normalize. It's when you get that feedback, you then get more anxious, and then you take your pressure again, and it keeps going up, and you take your pressure again, and it keeps going up, and you have this vicious cycle of things. It's the same. And that's why it's okay to take pressure readings once in a while, but for the most part, taking your blood pressure readings frequently, especially if you're on medications, the danger with that is because blood pressure can change from minute to minute, it really then becomes when you take that pressure. And so there are times where if you take the pressure and it's high, it may not reflect that it's high all the time. It's just that that specific instance, it may have been a little elevated. But
it's been pretty good.
Yeah, and it's the average blood pressure over time, which is why if we're trying to assess whether a treatment is working well or even to diagnose if someone has hypertension, we do what's known as an ambulatory blood pressure, where it's a 24-hour blood pressure monitor that takes about 4 to 5 readings every hour for 24 hours. And it averages it out during the day. And that way, you get a much better interpretation of whether there is indeed high blood pressure during the day or at night, or if the pressure is actually normal and there's only a few blips during the day where the pressure is elevated. And that helps us determine whether the treatment is successful or whether the adjustments need to be made. So we have to be very careful when taking single blood pressure measures, because they can be falsely elevated or at least give us a false interpretation of what's going on.
Right. Why does my heart rate stay the same, like a 50, 60, 70, even when my blood pressure goes up, and think, why is my heart not beating fast?
That's because of the metoprolol. The metoprolol is a beta blocker, and it slows down the pacemaker part of the heart that sends out the electrical pulse. So it keeps that relatively steady, but your pressure can still go up because it's not just dependent on the heartbeat per se or how fast the heart is going. It also is how your body responds to the increased demand. What tends to happen is certain arteries will constrict and resistance will build up to push blood into other areas that the body needs. And when the arteries do that, pressure will sometimes go up when you do that. So,
thank you so very much. I kind of thought it was the anxiety because I can feel it.
Right.
I don't know why I keep taking it. And I think my husband said, well, you know, it's 180 now. And then I take it again, it'll be 160. And
yeah, I think it's better to put the machine away for a little while.
Thank you so much, Dr. Okay.
You're welcome.
You're the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Dawn. This will be the last call for the Wednesday House Call, Dawn in Cornwall.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
Afternoon.
Sir, I have a psoriatic arthritis. I've called you a couple times before. I take methotrexate once a week.
Yep.
I take 8 pills at one shot. Is it possible, after 3 hours after I take it, it seems like where my kidneys would be is sore. Is it that's hard on you, that it's, you know, taxing my kidneys like that?
Not usually. Usually for methotrexate, you're monitoring its effect on blood cell production.
Yes.
I mean, you do want to check kidney function anyway, especially if there are underlying other medical conditions. Someone has high blood pressure or diabetes. You want to monitor and make sure that there's no harm coming to you. But the thing to keep in mind is that even though you're taking the methotrexate once a week, that day that you're taking it, you still have quite a bit in your body.
Yes.
So for 3 hours later, it's unlikely that taking that is what's causing
it.
How well is it working for you?
Well, it's considerable. I'm on a regime, like a concoction of Embryl, sulfasalazine, and methotrexate. And it worries me that I'm taking so much meds, but it's been phenomenal. I'm 150% better.
And that's the point, is if your quality of life is improved, and you're being monitored, I'm sure your physician
is
doing blood work and stuff.
Yeah, 4 weeks for blood work for the...
And they're checking your kidney function anyway, because you're taking the Enbrel.
It's probably mind over matter. I'm just worried that, all this stuff I'm taking that...
If anything, Don, what you have to think of is that what the medications are doing are reducing damage to your body.
There you
go. Right, because your arthritis is not as severe, your skin is not as damaged, so you're actually less damaged by taking it than not taking it. And again, as long as you are being monitored and it shows that all your blood tests are coming back normal, it's telling us that the medications are not doing you harm.
What is your feeling about the alcohol and methotrexate? I've almost completely stopped drinking.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea not to drink.
Okay. I used to have the odd drink.
You're better off. Yeah, as what alcohol does is it can change how your body metabolizes the medications and actually make them less effective.
No, I'm not missing it anyway. So
good stuff.
I seem to have more money in my pocket.
All right, Don.
Glad to hear you're on the mend there, Don.
Thanks for calling in.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, that's it.
We're
right out of time. You're in on Sunday?
Actually, hockey game is on Sunday. Next two Sundays, I have been replaced.
Oh, you get the weekends off,
Off. Well, I work this weekend at the office. So.
There you go. Not many days off for Dr. Dworkin. Good to see you,
Good to see you, too.
He'll be back next Wednesday, of course. And don't forget, health headlines during Madeley in the Morning at 10 minutes to 7 here on CFRA. 3:51 now, and here is Ted Raymond with the weather forecast and traffic.